Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Today is the second day of, today is the 14th day of April 2020. My name is Peter Wakeham. It's good to be with you as we discuss the issues of the day. I'm pretty sure that today is, the 14th, just making sure that we're on the right day of the right month. It's the day after Easter Monday. We're happy to be with you. Of course, we are here from 10 until 2, myself and John Stout. He is your producer and technical guru that will take us through to 2 p.m. And of course, I'm Peter Wakeham. And this is, well, an interesting Tuesday, certainly after Easter weekend. Normally, we are recovering from all kinds of Easter partying. This year, the situation, of course, is very different. Of course, everybody's been asking me to comment on the politics of this weekend, and I'm anxious to do so. But first, a couple of, public service. Got a couple of calls. Firstly, a gentleman who spoke to me this morning and said that he feels overwhelmed by the amount of information. Of course, government has been criticized for communicating too little. This gentleman says to me he thinks that they're communicating too much, and he feels overwhelmed with the number of WhatsApp messages he's been receiving, information on the television, information on the radio. He's saying it's all a bit too much. I told him I understand his challenge, because you appreciate in this situation, government has been trying to overcompensate in many ways, because in the first instance, they were criticized for inability to communicate. People were saying, I didn't know this and I didn't know that. I think it's hard for someone to say now that they don't know what is going on. What I would say to many of you, though, is that for me personally, I've been checking in with major media on mornings, you know, BBC, CNN, CBC, to see what's happening. I have been checking in again in the afternoon, similarly. And trying hard during the course of the day not to pay too much attention to the myriad of WhatsApp messages that invariably you get the same thing from 100 different people, chat groups and so on, because it can become very overwhelming. And I appreciate that for most of us, this period is a challenge. And the challenge is doing nothing and then being inundated with information, and invariably it presents a problem for us where we are overwhelmed. And I found very early in the crisis, I started to feel that way because the information was coming at me from all different angles. I was paying a lot of attention to CNN and BBC, and CNN has a bad habit of making everything a crisis. I mean, this one is a crisis of phenomenal proportions, and the death toll, the illness toll, the infection rates, all of these things have been overwhelming. And I would suggest to all of you that you limit your exposure to media in many ways. Make sure you have the essential information. I think the important message is to stay at home. And while you're at home, it's perhaps better for you to engage or occupy yourself with something in the garden or watching television of a different nature. Engage social media that is of more entertainment value, but please do not feel that you need to be transfixed to media, of course, other than Brass Tacks. That essentially overwhelms you, because it can become a psychological problem for many of you going forward. Another call, Ms. Foundation, who I always love to hear from. Ms. Foundation said she couldn't call, but she asked to communicate her congratulations to the Prime Minister for her excellent work in terms of managing the crisis. The other question she asked was regarding this whole reference to flattening the curve. And I'm not an epidemiologist, but I will take a stab at explaining what happens when we refer to this curve that we are told we need to flatten. The principle goes that the disease jumped from animals to humans, and then once there were human-to-human transmissions, that created a problem. And I think the best example would be the lady who is referred to as a super spreader in Italy, who my understanding is that she returned from China. She attended a religious convention somewhere in Italy, where she was locked away with several people for an extended period of time, and essentially infected dozens and dozens of people. That would be a pretty good example of what you refer to as this curve, because she ultimately started a process of infection, and the presumption is that every person that she infected would have infected one or two people that they came into contact with. So there's a multiplier effect, and you would recall early in the day the Prime Minister said, once you have a single infection, there will be more, because that's the way it works. A person comes in at the airport who is infected, they are greeted by someone who hugs them, and the infection continues. They go home to the family, the infection continues. The family members go and shop by the bar, and they have a drink, and they greet people, the infection continues. And it goes on and it goes on. The idea of flattening this curve says, if we can ensure that any individual who is infected does not come into contact with other persons, or alternatively comes into contact with them in a way that does not pass on the virus, then ultimately the curve becomes flattened, the rate of infections decrease to the point where the infection wears itself out. Because after 2 weeks or so, a person who is exposed will not be in a position to expose anyone else. And if that person has limited themselves for 2 weeks to a particular small circle, then ultimately you put the brakes on infections. And I think that's what we've really been trying to do in Barbados with this whole idea of social distancing. For the most part, it has been followed reasonably well. I do have some challenges where I pass by blocks. I pass by a lot of blocks. The one that's closest to me is Caerphilly, and then there's some blocks in Eden Lodge. And I don't get a sense that people who lime on those blocks understand that we are supposed to be under 24-hour curfew, in which you have no business being out there. And that's the problem, because many of these people are young, able-bodied. Many of them will probably not show signs of infection. Many of them probably won't be infected even. But certainly for those of them who are, they're not going to necessarily show signs. They'll be asymptomatic, but they can pass it on to the older relatives that they live with. So the importance of remaining at home is key to flattening this whole curve. And I think that that's something that we ought to be able to understand by now, a very simple message. So that's the other issue that Miss Undecided is my other friend, raised this morning. So those are the two things I wanted to put in. The other concern I had raised with someone related to online exams and privacy issues, which is something that could perhaps be dealt with on another occasion. But those are some of the issues that were coming up. So now to the politics, and let me just very quickly give you my take on it. Certainly, I spoke to Barbados Today and the VOB, so there may have been clips, and definitely there was something in the newspaper yesterday. This thing is not about sanitizing Chris Sinclair or preparing Chris Sinclair for future office. And I think that we need to be clear in that regard. We have a problem where the management of this crisis is concerned, especially as we go forward, and it is presented in two ways. One, that it's fairly clear that the non-Barbados Labour Party community, which is about 30% of people, 27% of people really, of which the Democratic Labour Party is about 22, is not on board in terms of them being able to sing with one voice in relation to the management of this crisis. I think the Prime Minister and the acting Prime Minister and the government has made an effort in terms of bringing a social partnership on board that would include Verla De Pisa as president of the Democratic Labour Party and other political organizations. But we have had interventions in social media and interventions on this program that demonstrate that our relationship is not working out so well. So early in the day, Paul Gibson, who was part of the social partnership as representing one of the political entities that was on it, he was on the program, and he was being critical of decisions that were taken. There has not been a single occasion over the last 2 weeks that Verla De Pisa has not been in the public domain, subsequent to attending social partnership meetings, speaking in a way that was inconsistent with what policy decision had been taken. This is not something that we can tolerate in this environment. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with opposition, but I do believe that this is one of those issues in which we have to pull together as one. That group clearly is not being represented, and I certainly think that one of the benefits of the Prime Minister's initiative is that maybe Chris Sinclair will be able to speak better to that group of persons. Maybe they have more confidence in him, and maybe he can pull that group along in terms of having their concerns and issues placed on the table. Because let's be clear, I don't really think there's a whole lot different in terms of the concerns that someone like Verde de Pisa was raising and that were on the table regarding the Prime Minister. But at the same time, what it has appeared to us in the public domain as though this is DLP policy initiatives versus BLP policy initiatives. And we need to get past that because this is not a time for the D versus B situation. So I think that that is one of the benefits that can come in relation to that. The other thing that I've been saying is that we have to also be clear that the government of Barbados going forward will have to make some very hard decisions to get this economy restarted. We had probably in the space of 2 weeks, essentially the construction of a whole hospital. That building in St. Lucie was bush and it was, you know, falling apart. Originally, it was youth service, and it would have been, well, sorry, before it was the naval base. It was a building that has been abandoned for a long time, and that is now a 100-bed hospital, which costs a lot of money. That would not have been budgeted for in relation to the estimates of last year, but the money was spent. Now, I don't know where the money came from, but I presume we are going to see a lot more of that in relation to managing a crisis where you say, let me spend the money now and do what I have to do, and I will deal with the logistics after because it's that kind of crisis situation, right? I don't know what our level of fiscal discipline is now, but the reality is that that is a detail that we can't really hurt our heads with at this time. If you want to legitimize this type of approach, you need a bipartisan group that can clearly identify these are the kinds of economic initiatives that have to be taken. So in short, I think that what Sinclair's presence can do is to help legitimize hard decisions that all of us know have to be taken. And I see his appointment in that regard as an attempt to legitimize and build cross-party support for important decisions that have to be taken going forward. I see it as that and no more. I do not see it as an attempt to bring Chris Sinclair back into politics. I don't think it is about that. I think it is about attempt to bring our country back into existence for all intents and purposes. But we can talk some more about it. Remember, you can call us on 434-1790. The chat is 266-IVOB. You can email me at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. Down to Brass Tacks, 434-1790. Good morning.
Hello, hi, good morning, Peter.
Good morning, how are you going? I just hear you a few minutes ago on the radio talking about... Yeah, you're a karaoke man.
My karaoke was. Let me say this to you, and I don't want you to start me this morning, because you got a habit of crisscrossing me, and
I bring out the true person.
Good, all
That's
right.
That's my role.
Peter, let me say this to you. I want 3 little points, and I only want three, well, at least about 6 minutes to make them, right?
All right, no problem.
And I am happy this morning to see that I have a listening Prime Minister, all right? And if I didn't know then the reason, I obviously know now why I like Prime Minister Morley. And check what I'm saying. Last week, you and I had a conversation, and I told you, and you poo-poo it, you make laugh and sport at it, and you don't. You give it a failing grade. When I told you that I believe the hardware stores should do a soft opening for people that got domestic issues, right? Mm-hmm. And you talk about cement and sand and gritting and galvanizing flooring board and that. That is not what I was advocating for. I was advocating for people that have plumbing issues, light fixture issues, that the hardware stores can do a soft opening, full door thing.
Yeah.
And the Prime Minister listened to me, okay? And she did not pay you from KFL, right, with your outrageous suggestion.
But why you gotta bring KFL into this?
She have a way of listening to ordinary people. Right, and that is why I like the lady. That one.
But you think that I was opposed to the idea of hardware stores opening?
Of course, from what you said last
week. It wasn't that. I just said that I think that when you open that opportunity, then the construction sector may very well feel it should start back.
No, No, it was not for that. It was people that have domestic issues.
Right, and I agree that that's something that needs to be dealt with.
That's
so
right.
we see how it goes this week, you know.
No, let me go back. Let me touch this one here, right? And then this is my second one. I believe the Prime Minister also now should listen to me further and make a hard bite the bullet at this time. At this time, and I know this is going to surprise you, right? Bite the bullet at this time, Madam Prime Minister, you and your team, which is doing a good job. And before I get there, let me say this to you. With the amount of messages and the amount of awareness and the amount of advice that I get in on my phone through social media about the COVID-19 and coronavirus and all the rest of it, I'm overwhelmed. I really shutting off my phone to the messages, and I prepared only to listen to the team from Barbados, who is obviously doing a good job. You know, you cannot fault the government and the team, you know, head by Richard Carter, for the kind of approach that Barbados take to securing Barbados and enlightening Barbados about the danger and the steps you could take, you should take to safeguard yourself. So I only now open to the team of Barbados. And that's the truth. If you want to send me something on the phone, send me a thing for you to laugh at, for you to skin my teeth out. Send me a good joke. All right?
That's poof. So you agree with that guy that spoke to me this morning?
But what?
About the guy said it was too much information.
Too much. I would like my brothers and sisters in Barbados, right, to pay close attention to the team of Barbados. That's true. Because, the COVID team of Barbados. I really, and listen to the Prime Minister, because the Prime Minister got this infectious voice that when she speak, whether you like she or not, you have no other choice but to listen, because she speak from her heart. She put a real life, a real touch on her presentation. And that's why, like the lady over the years, I want to move to this, say that again, to praise you. And then the final one, okay? I would like the Prime Minister and her team right now, right?
To ban Pickford South.
No, man. My Pickford South.
sorry. I promise I won't interrupt.
I like Pickford South every day of the week, man. So you don't get there. I really started. I couldn't get it last Saturday. But the truth is, though, the crop over thing is hard and is a bitter pill to take. But I would like the Prime Minister to announce from now that there will be no crop over for this year, okay? Because as you very well know, who you can sell crop over to this year? Nobody. People still gonna be scared of socializing. People still gonna be scared of traveling, and people can't travel now anyhow, right? So put a halt to it. And I'm not telling the Calypsonians don't send up music, but I would think it's a money making event. If you send up music, you're looking to get a return. So just put the brakes on crop over for this year.
Can I respond before you go to your final point?
No,
because you remember the year that it was cholera in Trinidad.
Pardon me?
It was cholera.
That's before my time.
Right.
Before my time.
It was before my time too, but you
older
than me.
I really don't know.
Right. There was a year that there was cholera in Trinidad. You remember that there was a song that Kitchener had called Rainorama?
I got to hear it sing.
Because of the cholera outbreak.
For me, I know you can't sing.
They moved Carnival down to the rainy season in August, I believe. They postponed it. And basically, Panorama was in the rain because it was the rainy season, and it was Panorama in the rain. And then Kitchener came up with this song called Rainorama. He had a house in Digo Martin. His house is, the name of his house was Rainorama, actually.
Okay.
So, but you should know this.
I probably hear it, but
you should know.
I pay too much attention.
I tell you, we're up on Calypso. It's a distinctive house. As soon as you turn into Digo Martin, it's there, and it was green, and he had a lot of like figurines and so on.
I know
where
Kitchener live, you know.
Right, but you never see the house near Rainorama?
And I know the Calypso Tent Review.
Okay.
Right? I big on Kitchener.
Yeah. And I used to go when I was living in Trinidad. But anyhow, the point I'm making is that there's precedent. And I think that this may very well be one of the considerations. Can we postpone crop over to maybe Christmas?
And we could have a Christmas festival. Buddy. Don't touch Christmas.
Why not?
Because Christmas... Look, if you want me, if the Prime Minister want me and she become...
To get away?
On get away, Let you disrupt Christmas.
But what about Christmas would offend Crop Over?
Christmas stands alone.
Why?
Because the whole surrounding of Christmas, the pampery, the everything about
if
Christmas.
You celebrate the in you got Independence and then you got Christmas right on top of it. You could drop Crop Over in either of those because it's a celebration of life, no?
It would not be the same, buddy. It would not be the same.
But there's nothing significant about Crop Over when it is because the crop done finished. Crop done finished just now.
But you see that the name, that the brand name, I don't think that Crop Over Barbados now has anything to do with cutting the chicken cane.
I would opt for a November Crop Over.
Nah,
personally, a November Crop Over, Independence Crop Over, and if it is too short a timeline, I would drop it in Christmas
week. You don't have enough time, buddy.
In St. Kitts, they actually do their festival Christmas time.
Do you know that Antigua dropped theirs this, I've announced coming from Gaston Brown this morning.
He has dropped theirs?
He has dropped his.
Cancel it all together. Man, that's brave, boy.
I think that we should follow the Antigua thing, right?
So Sandy banned alcohol, and you want me to cancel Crop Over?
Let Crop Over stand on this year, and you know how that can hurt me.
You're gonna cause ruction in this country.
It's hurting me to stand.
But the only thing that you left in is the Pigfoot sauce.
No, we're looking at preserving life, huh?
All right.
That is the ultimate goal.
What's the final thing you have for me?
Final thing is this, right? I am so happy this morning when Mayor Amar Motley announced that Christopher Sinclair would be a part of her team going forward, right? Because I guess that the Prime Minister looked at the contribution, the political contribution of Chris Sinclair, and since the election, you haven't heard Chris Sinclair, and she's wondering, wait, I wonder if Chris ride out in the sunset. No, I got something for him to do. I want he help me. I want he assist, not help, I want he assist me with a particular venture. And I hope that Chris accept the challenge and work
He's
on
accepted
behalf
it.
Of Barbados. Because when the dust is settled, Barbados will be better off. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying to you, which you know already, Chris Sinclair is one of the better political brains in this country. He can lead anybody. Chris can lead me anyway. And with he and Miss Motley working together, man, my dear.
But you feel that he is back in the political business?
I hope so. I sincerely hope so.
Man, you make his
spirit. I sincerely hope so.
But you know what create reaction.
Because you
in one right? conversation tell me that you want to cancel Crop Over, and the next conversation you're saying you want Chris Sinclair to lead the Democratic Labour Party again.
I want to say this to you. If Chris Sinclair is still interested in our elective politics, I would like it to start from now and let Chris Sinclair go to St. John.
Boy.
I am saying that big and bold. Because I know all Chris got to do is stand up in St. John, and he already declared the winner. The same thing in Northwest. He don't have to canvass a vote. Thanks a lot.
But I hear the people down there calling for him.
They should.
I hear they're calling for him.
A good man. And if you know the Prime Minister well, right?
But my question, sir, is do you think that Chris can be as effective from the opposition or even out of Parliament as he was when he was Minister of Finance with the resources he had at his disposal?
And this is my heart, right? This is from my heart. Like I tell you, I love Miss Motley, but you know, Peter, even when I crossed and went over to the Barbados Labour Party, I called three names that nobody could ever ask me to speak ill about.
Mm-hmm. Chris is one of them.
George Pilgrim, mm-hmm. Ronald Jones, and Chris Sinclair.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody could pay me enough money to speak against them people or to say something negative about those three guys, okay? And you also know that if Miss Motley, Prime Minister Motley, like a good political battle on her hand, and when the dust is settled in 2023, I would like Chris Sinclair's name to be called among
A couple of comments are coming online that I want to share with you.
Yes.
One of them...
But I don't want to be sure I could go.
No, I can just share them and then you can go, right? The first person is asking if you have been either drinking or if you are losing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't drink, and I don't think I'm losing it.
You don't drink?
I don't think I lose, not to that extent. I never get drunk.
Because that's the first comment that's coming from. I believe it's a lady. You don't smoke neither?
I don't smoke nothing.
All right. So you are of sound mind and completely corpus mentis.
There's a lady
that is saying she feels that you... Is that... Someone is suggesting that the person that should really be there is Miss Donvalinus. And the only reason that Chris get there is because y'all getting a lock up Donville.
Well, let me say this to you on behalf
of... What is your view on that?
In respect to my good friend Don Valenis, I also said, right, when Don Valenis was fighting his battle, right, back in the United States,
mm-hmm.
I said that I would like to see my friend Don Valenis walking the streets of Barbados again as a free man. Right? And that's my take. Right, I follow with the Democratic Labour Party, but I still have some very close people that I like and appreciate.
Well, I don't have a difficulty with that logic because, as you know, I don't wish either of those individuals ill. Chris continues to be a friend of mine, and it puts me in a peculiar position because often as an analyst, I have to
speak. Do you believe that Chris has something political to offer this country?
I think he has something professional to offer this country.
Good.
Politically, I have my reservations, and I have said it before that I really don't think that I think that Chris's political days are over. I felt that Erskine Sandifer's political days are over in 94.
I don't agree with you.
Is that Chris had a bright political future, but I think that Chris's mistake was when he took that job as Minister of Finance after 2013.
I think the party mistake, and let me say this to you, I think the party mistake is that the Eager 11 did not follow through with their plan.
Yeah, but I had a difficulty with that. They should have gone through. But then if the Eager 11 had followed through, who would be leading?
I put Chris Pinkers to be the leader, right? You know that, Miss Martin, like a good political battle, right? You know that, right?
Yeah, no question about that.
And you know the man is a fearless debater.
Mm.
Anyway, Peter, thanks a lot, man.
It was good chatting with you. Don't mind the naysayers online. I only have to read the, I read the messages, but I, you know. Anyhow, I think we had a good chat. Wesley, take care, eh? Down to Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Peter.
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
Yeah,
good,
Glenn.
How's
it
going? Good.
Yes, sir. I'm surviving well.
Good morning. And
good. First of all, a little correction for you.
Yeah, it's polio.
Talking about the AIDS come to bed, okay?
Sorry?
No, I'm dealing with the situation in Trinidad, but it was polio.
Right.
Itself.
It was the polio.
It was polio.
It was polio, right, yeah. Somebody mentioned that message and said that it was polio. I thought it was cholera.
Oh, no, it's polio.
Okay.
And then the last few lines of the chorus, the song went, but what was so comical, that in midst of Bacchanal, rain came and washed out mass in May.
Yeah.
That's how the chorus to the song went.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
So that was a perfect example of the fact that the drama of moving the festival to the rainy season in August created
the gods.
Right, precisely. It created an environment where the creativity of Kitchener would have been able to go forth.
But
I acknowledge the correction and thank you for that.
Yeah. No problem.
I 1972.
I too have, from the outset, given my support to the overall policy and strategy of the government's policies dealing with the COVID situation.
Mm-hmm.
I said I did, and I asked other people to trust the follow the science and to trust the public servants of Barbados, in whom I still have a lot of faith in many areas.
Mm-hmm.
But from time to time, I've had to be critical of some of the while I support the overall strategy, I have had the time to be critical of the individual tactics used in implementing that strategy. And one of the foremost examples of that was not so much happened with the supermarket, but was what would happen, how the patients were treated last week. And I tell you why. There's a principle, a saying, a philosophy in planning and execution that you never underestimate the importance of local knowledge. Never underestimate the importance of local knowledge. I'm sure I've heard you reference this too when you're dealing projects about roads, et cetera, and Barbados. And I say that because I was shocked at that, because somebody must have known about how many pensioners there were in Barbados. my research tells me, you have 44,000 NIS pensioners. Let me repeat that. 44,000 NIS pensioners in Barbados. Of 10,008 of whom, only 10,008 of whom get lodgements of their checks, of their payments in the bank or credit union. The other 33,992 have checks.
So you're saying it's 10%? Is one-third of the number? No, it's less than one-third.
Less than one-third. So they have 33,992 were scheduled to draw checks last week. And not only that, they were drawing two checks. Mm-hmm. So that turns out like 67,984 checks. So I baffled, how could you expect to service a possible 67,984 checks in 8 hours, four for the first day, 9 to 1 for the first day, mm-hmm. and 9 to 1 the second day, but the second day was extended. Somebody should have known on us how many people we have to compress.
What would you have done, Glenn?
Well, they didn't open more time. More time to the people. Because it was like, to me, they put trying to put a 12-foot shoe, a 12-size foot, and trying to jam it into six-size shoe. You understand? When you conflate those numbers, into that time, it's going to compress on the situation and cause awkward.
I don't have a difficulty with that. My thing is that I think a big challenge was caused by the fact that the banks were not open to take some of the pressure off.
But that's another thing.
That to me, not open the ATMs. If the ATMs were taking deposits, I think that would have taken a lot of pressure off. And I think it's unfortunate that the ATMs were not taking deposits.
But let me tell you what also compounded the situation with the pensioners. But that, you know, as Edmund Hinkson said, there was a drastic. These post office took the heaviest cut in staff in the BERT program.
Yeah.
Right?
And but Glenn, a post office ain't had to write cash and checks?
But why not?
But why should a post office is about posting letters?
Post office, that is your...
Can you take a check to the post office in Trinidad and Tobago, which is now TT Post? Can you take a check to the post office in the United Kingdom or the United States of America and get it cash?
I don't know, and I
right.
don't care.
Glenn, listen. Glenn, I'm sorry.
Let me have my
say. Right. I'm sorry. You know, you've made your point. And I'm saying, I understand that this issue was badly handled last week. It was not the only thing that was badly handled. Okay? And I accept your point that the number of 33,000 is large. And I think that it was a Herculean task to assume that the number of post offices with their compromised staff number would have been able to service the needs of all of those people in a short space of time. So I take your point on that. You're entirely right. Going forward, however, I do not believe that the issue really is about the mismanagement of resources at the post office, because ultimately the post office is doing something it should not be involved in. Cash and checks is a banking function, and it should not be done at any post office. I appreciate that these are peculiar circumstances, and we have to respond to it. But what I would say to you, Glenn, going forward is, let me put this on the table. Do you think that this fiasco, which is clearly a fiasco, has formed the basis of a policy that was articulated by Justin Robinson back in 2009, that we need to ensure that the National Insurance stop issuing paper checks to people, full stop? What is your response?
Let me deal with why I would say no to that, right? Let me deal with it. How many, there's a post office virtually in every parish in Barbados. Right. There's no credit union. There's no branch or a credit or branch or a bank.
There's
no
ATM in every parish.
There's no ATM.
There is an ATM in every parish.
St. Andrews does not even have a post office.
Y'all have an ATM?
No, my ATM.
Y'all got ATM somewhere about there?
My St. Thomas people have to go to St.
Thomas have an ATM in Warrens.
No, I'm talking about, sorry, St. Andrews. St. Andrews does not have a post office.
Are you sure they got ATM in St. Andrews?
Right there. Do they have one in Fort Worth, St. John?
They got ATM in St. John, yeah.
Where? Not now?
Yes, it's right there. There's one right there.
Because I know in the by-election that people the old St. John people...
But they get one since, though.
Okay. But the point I'm making is that they do not have a...
They have an ATM.
One ATM can't serve the whole parish.
Glenn, anyhow, that's developmentally... You identify the developed country in which a post office is be cashing checks for people. And but I would say you have a point. The fact is that we are going along a road of development that will take us away from that. And I think that this issue has highlighted the fact that we cannot allow this time next year to reach us, and national insurance is still issuing 30-something checks, 1,000 checks a month.
But did you hear on Saturday night the Prime Minister deemed the poor
family? I heard what she said on the issue, right, but I don't have to agree with everything she says. She said you got to meet people where they are. But my point is you also got to carry them forward.
And people, Peter, are in their community. The post offices were set up in the 40s, 50s by Gradius. The communities, that is why there is...
When you were pitching marbles at primary school, and the point is that it is time for us to move past that.
Because London didn't got it, they weren't doing it?
No, I'm just saying that we have evolved as a people out of a situation where post offices were banks.
But we have evolved, we should evolve at our own pace and our own way.
And the point is that the pace of this was too slow. Justin Robinson said it in 2009, and he get all met in Barbados for saying that national insurance needs to stop issuing all of these checks.
The national insurance is there to serve the public of Barbados to contribute. They're not there to serve some academic theory.
But the approach that is being taken to distribution of funds is inefficient.
But how much does it cost?
Let's say, for example, we were all electronic and they wanted to give a bump to pensioners, where we say, in light of the circumstances, we can give you an additional $600. Electronically, you could do that overnight. If you have to go and issue checks, you create a bottleneck. The point is that it is an inefficient system.
How long checks have been around?
Nah, it's a bottleneck. Anyhow, again, you will say that view. I disagree with you, but there was something else you wanted to say because I realized that we're on for a long time.
Just quickly about the banks. Mm. Right? I was surprised that the banks were allowed to get away with what they did. I found it strange that the banks can make to shut down everything. So I wonder if they discussed it with the government and somebody didn't catch on to it, or whether just doing, you know, they think it was unfair and insensitive. The banks clamped down everything again to be efficient and to save money.
The banks claimed that government prohibited them from doing deposits. That was what I was hearing from the banks. Right.
When the
acting prime minister spoke, she did not give the impression that it was government that made the decision. She gave the impression that the bank said that they could not run a deposit function through ATM without the kind of staff that they would need to do it. Well, the banks were saying that it was government that prohibited them from taking deposits. I don't really know who fault it was, and I don't really care. But the point is that there is absolutely no way banks in Barbados should have been able to say, we will not accept deposits via ATMs. That is complete and total nonsense.
You cannot have a state within a state.
Right, there
the
you go.
They cannot be unilateral and insult the sovereignty of Barbados. They can do that to the power of Barbados and get away with it. It's wrong, and I would always say so. Yeah. Thank you, Peter.
All right, thanks a lot, Glenn. Somebody's saying that the NAS can issue debit cards to people which can be used everywhere, and that this is a facility that is used in some countries. And it's one that is perhaps worthy as consideration. So if you don't want to give people checks, give people a debit card. The money goes on and they're going to withdraw it at their convenience. If it is that, you know, the idea of having an account is something that's so challenging for people. I know that certainly the welfare facilities in some developed countries also use the idea of a debit card. So that's something to think about. Down to brass tacks, 434-1790. Peter, you need to get real. My mother's 82 years old and can't use an ATM. We have to look out for the elderly. And I'd say to that lady, my mother's 88 years old and she can't use an ATM. What exactly is your point? This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Peter.
Morning, sir. How are you doing? Good, Patrick. Good to hear you.
I'm doing wonderful.
I hope you had a blessed and a wonderful Easter weekend. While you could not join the faithful at church, I'm sure you would have spent copious amounts of time on your knees in prayer and reflection.
One of the things that we have going is the Zoom where you can still tune in and be part of the congregation from a distance. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why I couldn't understand why the evangelist was seeking to get a petition from church leaders around this country in his quest to have the church mobilize the leaders to have them sign this petition to get the government to open back the church. I thought that the comments was reckless and irresponsible, but I don't want to discuss that this morning, Peter. Mm-hmm. I come to discuss two things with you this morning. I want to discuss first this whole, the alphabetical order grocery shopping. I must allow the government at this time for, in its efforts and quest to properly put a system in place that all and sundry would be accommodated in these uncharted waters, right? But one of the things I would add to this, Peter, is that I would give each 25% that go into the supermarket, I would allow them 20 minutes only, between 15 and 20 minutes to shop, mm-hmm. and 5 minutes at the cash register to get out. Because you don't want people in the because every hours are from 8 to 11. Mm-hmm. And you got girls selling in there on a cell phone asking who want rice at home, who want chicken, she ain't got no list. It's taking up all the time. It means that other people out there are outside supermarket trying to get in as well. So I would give them limited time to get in and get out. Because if you're just picking up items that you probably ran out of over the last 2 weeks, I don't think that you want half hour and 45 minutes to do so. That's the only thing that I would add. But that is not anything that the government can get. That would apply to those personnel who are manning the supermarkets and the people entering and exiting their supermarkets. The next thing I want to speak to Peter is the president of the Democratic Labour Party. And let me say up front, Peter, I am not being political because I have no vested interest at this time in politics.
Let me say, in terms of your last point, though, Patrick, I think that you have a good point that one of the challenges with supermarkets is that there's too much socializing that goes on in supermarkets.
Precisely.
The first place I ever met Wesley was in a supermarket. And invariably, when you meet people in supermarkets, a lot of old talk and stuff. I think that for the time being, time limitation is difficult to impose, but I do feel that people have to understand that during the phase of this crisis, supermarkets need to be a place for business. Go in, get your groceries, and leave. But the last time I went to the supermarket, when the crisis had already started, people still want old talk. And I think that has been a problem, and I think that has caused a lot of the challenges that people inside, and they don't realize, go in, take out your things, and go along with your business.
Well, you don't want
the old talk and the socializing and whatnot, there's going to be a time for that. Anyhow, yeah, so next point.
Right. The president of the Democrat Labour Party, Verdi Pisa. I'm interested to hear her views as it relates to the Prime Minister, who would have approached the Minister of Finance, former Minister of Finance, Christopher Sinclair. I want to hear her views. Because she's on the newscast very often in the last couple of days, and since this announcement, I have not heard her voice on it.
She said something yesterday.
Because I know that not all that is in Israel are Israelites. I know that very well.
They got some Jews there too.
Not all that is in
Patrick,
Israel.
Patrick, the Democrat Labour Party issued a statement yesterday.
On it?
I don't know if you saw it yet. Not on the Chris Sinclair thing. They issued a statement on the overall situation that as a country we're facing.
Right. Okay.
Which I found interesting in and of itself, because up to this point, the person that has been speaking has been Verdi Pisa.
Precisely.
Now, it appears as though the Democratic Labour Party has been speaking as of yesterday.
But the truth is, Peter, and I must tell you, because I put a post on my Facebook page, and again, a lot of likes from some people, but I would never be a hypocrite, because the practice of hypocrisy is often carried out by hypocrites. Why it may be true to say, and let me say, Peter, that in my quest to canvass against the Democratic Labour Party in the last general election, I canvassed on the issues of corruption, not on policies of the Democratic Labour Party. So let me make that absolutely clear. And the next thing I want to say, Peter, that why it might be true, or it can be said, that the former Minister of Finance, Christopher Sinclair, would have made some bad choices or decisions. Not all that he made were bad either. Because the point must be made, Peter, right, that the NSRL, in my view, even though it was criticized by the Morley-led administration, I believe, Peter, that the NSRL was a brilliant, Peter, revenue collection method. I believe so. Let me explain why I believe this. All the persons who were escaping at the front of the pen of the rightful Jews as it relates to taxes were coming through cracks that NSRL sought to deal with. The problem, however, with the NSRL was that the then minister failed to put mechanisms in place that will then quell the merchant class. Those individuals who sought to mislead Barbados into believing that because the introduction of the NSRL, that it caused prices to skyrocket in the country, and that was not true. And that rather than confronting these individuals, what Chris sought to do was to come up with a basket, a goods with zero percent on them. And in many instances, a lot of the things that were highlighted in the basket were not things that Barbadians would normally on the ordinary course go to buy. You had things like the British fish, I can't remember the name of it now. And a whole lot of almond nuts and all them kind of things that were on the exempt list. And I'm saying caviar was the thing that I was trying to remember. Mm-hmm. All those things were on the list, and the truth is, the list was not properly thought out. So, but it has nothing to do with the policy. It had a lot to do with the implementation of the basket, and not confrontingly dealing with the source, the problem that was created as a result of the introduction of the NSR, right? And so I believe, right? Mm-hmm. First and foremost, that former minister, finance minister Christopher Singler, is a Barbadian first and foremost, and that if he accepts the position from the Prime Minister of Barbados, I do not think that there's nothing inherently wrong with it.
He has accepted right? it.
Good. And not only that, Peter. This is the point that a lot of Barbadians jump over without waiting or asking the question. And I think the Prime Minister deliberately did it. The Prime Minister never mentioned if he was a consultant to her economic team, or if he would be paid a salary or anything like that. So right now we do not know if it is voluntary or if it's a paid position.
I'm assuming it is not paid.
This is a dirty point. So rather than running off to make all of the unwanted assumptions that they had in there and wait to bring it in, wait to this and that, you know, I thought that persons would have sought to find out first if it was if he was approached to come and volunteer his expertise over there. Don't mind he said that he learned it by the job. Because a lot of people that went and learned by the job too, Peter. But I had jobs I learned by the job. Mm-hmm.
I come and learn on the job as a moderator. So
precisely. I'm not going to be distracted by that nonsense, yeah. Right? I think that if he's willing, and the Prime Minister see anything that she can extract, because the truth, Peter, is that if you research, and that's what I'm currently doing, is seeking to look at some policies that would be implemented under Chris. To see the ones that were good, I think one of the things that come to mind was I think it was the introduction, the new thing, I think it was the BTAA, mm-hmm. that came under former tourism minister. I think it was sanctioned by Chris, where you had individuals going abroad to seek new things for ventures for Barbados in relation to tourism. The harsh thing about it, then I got close by saying this. I believe that the government of Barbados may have to revisit the NSR, because now that tourism is now on the back foot, and there is no known date, time, or whatsoever that tourism will be back and running in its full capacity as it was over the years. So mechanisms must now be sought. And I believe that that's the economic team probably is now working on to see how Barbados now will be efficient in its revenue collection, so that those who are being paid out of the public purse, and those who depend on pensions and so on, that these things can continue to be served. Because we can't service it by borrowing money. Right. Because the money has to be paid at some point.
All right, Patrick. Right. Thank you for calling and for the suggestions that you put on the table. I have a WhatsApp message from a lady who is having a challenge. She said, Peter, I'm a mother of four children renting, and landlord collects rent in December and gave me notice to quit. She told me she wants the house back and sent a letter through the post office saying to quit and live out the additional month, which is the security deposit. So she has done so. February would have been the time that she lived out the additional month. And at the beginning of February, the police came and told her that the landlord has asked her to leave. And she has said that she is looking for a place. The problem right now is that the prices are high and she's not working. She's still in the house, and a letter has come again saying to her that she needs to leave the place and that the matter has been put in court. The landlord has also been to Light and Power to cut off the light, and so she will have no light at night. She wants advice regarding what can be done to help secure herself and her children under these circumstances. She has been forced to send the children to the grandmother. And ma'am, quite frankly, I don't know if I'm the best person to advise. I think that you need probably quickly to get hold of someone at the welfare department regarding assistance that can be rendered. You are perhaps in a good candidate for assistance, in as much as you are a single mother with two children, so you may be a good candidate for assistance. But the challenge, of course, now is that that institution is somewhat overwhelmed. I believe they're overwhelmed by the number of people that have been asking for assistance. Your situation predates the COVID crisis, so your eviction and your lack of housing is not a COVID issue. And I suspect that there are many people who have COVID issues that will probably take priority. Not that that's how it should be, but I suspect that's how it will be. So the best I can advise you, ma'am, is to make contact with someone from the welfare department and see if there's anything they can do under this situation, under these circumstances. It's also possible that if your landlord does not have a potential renter at this point in time, maybe they will want to reconsider allowing you to stay there for the time being, since you are perhaps going to give them something towards the rent, while otherwise they may not necessarily get anything. Morning, Peter. You lack information about how the whole pension system goes about cashing checks. If the system is changed, it will bring hardships on them. And this is from my good friend Tony Wiggins, who is a pensioner. And Tony, you and I discussed this last week. 33,000 checks. I don't know if you guys have any idea about the tremendous cost of that facility. It is highly inefficient. It is costly. To the person who said to me the other day that at 82, the other email I received when I said that my mother is 88, the person said at 82, their mother is senile and that's the only way they can do business. And I would say to you, if your mother is senile at 82, I don't think she should be cashing checks either. If you are in a position to take control of their business for them and you can execute it, you can probably more easily execute it through a bank or a financial institution as a result of their senility. I have had been involved in the process of converting to this electronic system on behalf of persons who were corpus mentis and non-corpus mentis in my family. And in both instances, it was a process that could be facilitated. So if a person is in a state where they are in early senility or late senility or whatever stage of senility, there's absolutely no reason why you cannot do those facilities on their behalf. We have to be helpful to our seniors. And I think that one of the ways of being helpful to our seniors is encourage them to get this thing online and stop feeling that the only way things can be done is the way that things were done 10 years ago.